summer deepens into one of those long, lazy days that merits the long, pale gold crescent of the beach and the turquoise sea. Although we're very busy with visitors at this time of year, you can still enjoy a calm, peaceful time if you come early in the morning, soon after dawn. The sky is blue and there is a crispness in the air. There are only a few swimmers on the beach yet. Let's go in and have the first cup of coffee of the day. John Cooper. Many people come here to read in the peachy dawn light, or even to work. If you bring your laptops up here, you can enjoy the sunshine or contemplate the horizon, while all the time kidding yourself and your boss that you are working. Today's story is about someone who took their work very seriously. It's called The Very Popular Poems of Patricia Jantz. Patricia Jantz is enjoying the sun on the West Cliff. She has brought a collapsible chair from where she keeps it stored on the back seat of her Austin Ruby, which is parked on the verge not far away. She's also bought a small camping table and her trusty portable typewriter and pile of blank sheets of foolscap paper. She has a large hat to keep the sun out of her eyes and constantly flicks away the ash from her Turkish cigarette, which she has clamped firmly between her lips as she works. Occasionally, she stops to consider the distant horizon for a moment, and the cigarette ash stays on the paper where it burns small brown-edged holes. Unconcerned, she flicks the embers away and continues typing, rattling away at the keys as if possessed by a demon. Patricia Jantz is given to floating flowery dresses and chiffony Indian print scarves. She is what may be termed a bohemian. Although Patricia Jantz is not a real name, it is one that is immediately recognisable to churchgoers throughout the English-speaking world. Patricia Jantz is a writer of hymns. Patricia Jantz's hymns have a sort of jolly delight in the world, which is entirely at odds with the work of the composers who set them to lugubrious, dreary tunes, and to church organists who like to play them as slowly and miserably as possible, and to congregations for whom church attendance and hymn singing is the miserable penance for being alive, and for whom the idea of bohemian jollity and delight is entirely alien. Patricia Jantz doesn't really care. She is well paid by her publishers. Her works are published in every hymnal and collection of devotional works and especially called for in times of disasters and catastrophes, be they natural, tidal waves, floods, volcanoes, or man-made, mining tragedies, wars, and riots. These hymns have paid for her Austin Ruby and the smart portable typewriter, her flowing costumes, and her supply of Turkish cigarettes. Patricia Jantz sometimes wonders what her life would be like if somebody actually wrote a tune that fitted the spirit of her words.
I wonder what my life would be if somebody actually wrote a tune that fitted the spirit of my words.
She had once been approached by a well-known band leader who had been appearing with his well-known band at the Pier Theatre, who suggested that very thing. But in the end, Patricia Jantz had demurred. For all her bohemian ways, she knew which side her bread was buttered, and she wasn't going to spoil a well-tried recipe. It pleased her to know that she could come here to the Westcliff to be inspired by the delicious scent of the new-mown grass, the deep shade of the old pine trees, the sound of the wheeling gulls, and the sight of the sea that glittered and sparkled all the way to the horizon, while her readers may be sunk in a morass of gloom and despondency. Hymns were not her only source of income. She also wrote short, uplifting spiritual poems for inclusion in ladies' magazines. These were greatly sought after by editors who knew how much they were appreciated by their readerships because of the number of letters they received to that effect. In fact, they were so popular that a number of periodicals had commissioned her to write regular contributions. So, as not to dilute the impact of her work, she wrote these columns under various pseudonyms. Thus, in the Lady's Star, she had a weekly column entitled Thoughts from a Lady, where she was credited as Miss Lavinia Hardcastle, while she also had a column called A Lady Contemplates in the Home Gazette as Mrs. Diana Maud. And there had been a consistent and loyal battle between the editors and readership of one against the editors and readership of the other as to the relative merits of the poems of Miss Hardcastle versus Mrs. Maud. She airily kept herself above such matters. All she knew was that the poems were often read out at meetings of the Women's Guild and Mother's Union that had resulted in heated partisan discussion as to the relative merits and demerits of one or the other. There were even reports from time to time of actual physical violence, with specially weighted handbags being wielded. The high point of her career so far occurred when she was invited to broadcast a number of her poems in the Sunday evening slot for the British Broadcasting Corporation from their newly built studios in London. Now, Miss Lavinia Hardcastle, as she thought of herself for this event, was not of a nervous disposition, but she considered it only prudent to arrive at the hallowed portals of the newly built broadcasting house, stiffened against any eventuality. So she spent a quiet half an hour in the lounge of the Langham Hotel, being uplifted spiritually by a couple of large whiskies. She also passed a small corner shop and had purchased a bottle of gin because she might very well need reinforcement in what might prove to be trying circumstances. The commissionaire, puzzled by her bohemian appearance and dangling cigarette, had very nearly not let her in, as he was expecting the well-known religious poetess Lavinia Hardcastle. It was only when she seized him by the collar and threatened to punch his lights out, yelling,
"I am Lavinia bloody Hardcastle, you goon!"
that he relented. And it took her some minutes to calm herself in the green room. When she looked in the hospitality cabinet and found only tonic water and seltzer instead of the 16-year-old Macallan she had asked for, the harassed studio manager had had to explain that Lord Reith did not allow intoxicating liquors on the premises, which caused her to pin him against the studio wall with,
"In that case, I may not be able to read out my bloody poems."
And he decided to turn a blind eye as she fetched her own bottle out of the capacious handbag and set it down by the microphone when they were called into the studio.
"You can tell your bloody Lord Reith that this is strictly medicinal. My voice doesn't work without it."
And she took a large tumblerful to get things going. The studio manager prayed with the sort of fervour that Lord Reith would have applauded in his senior staff, except that the prayer had been merely to get through the next half hour without any serious cock-up. The green light had winked on, and Miss Lavinia Hardcastle launched into one of her pieces about trembling baby squirrels in sun-dappled forest clearings, and the studio manager allowed himself a brief sigh of relief. But after the third poem, "See How the Swallows Flitter in God's Heaven," Miss Hardcastle became fearful for her voice and took a medicinal slug. And another. By the fifth poem, "Look How the Darling Puppies Bound About on the Greensward," she was becoming confused about who she was meant to be, and interpolated a couple of poems by Mrs. Maud. And then, as a rousing finale, she gave a full-blooded rendition of "The Caterpillars Will Soon Be Butterflies Fluttering Up to Thee, O Lord," by Patricia Jantz herself.
"The caterpillars will soon be butterflies,"
she sang with gusto of a sort unknown to all her composers, all those lily-livered organists and buying flocks of Sunday worshippers. She sang loud and lustily until the green light winked out and the enraged figure of Lord Reith himself had stormed through the studio doors. "How dare you, madam!" he roared in Presbyterian wrath.
"Miss! I am a miss!"
"Ah, very well. How dare you, miss? This is outrageous blasphemy. That is one of my favourite hymns. You have despoiled the work of the most beautiful and sensitive poets living or dead. You call yourself a poet. You are not worthy to breathe the same air as Patricia Jantz, let alone utter her very words on air. On my radio station, you are drunk, madam. I can put it no more politely than that."
"You are absolutely right, Jimmy. I am as pissed as a skunk."
"Well, Miss Hardcastle, you are henceforward banned from ever broadcasting on the BBC again." Miss Hardcastle held up a wavering hand.
"I have in a bag here a contract to perform my works here in this very spot for the next 6 weeks."
"I don't care. We can't allow such disgraceful behaviour on the BBC," he thundered in mighty Presbyterian tones, as though consigning her to eternal damnation.
"So what do you intend to do about my contract?"
"We'll pay your contract, and good riddance to ye."
My lawyers may not feel inclined to accept that arrangement.
Double it? We'll treble it. Just never darken our doors again.
Plus expenses.
Plus all the expenses you can dream up in that vile barbarian brain of yours.
That's very sweet of you, Jimmy. By the way, may I inquire how you intend to fill all that airtime?
I know someone who will do it. Someone with the sweetest and loveliest disposition who would never let us down in this barbaric way. He turned to the studio manager in his rage. Get on the phone immediately, Haskins, and contact Patricia Jance. She would never behave in such an ungodly manner, I'm sure of it.
So, Patricia Jance is a personal friend of yours?
She and I have a spiritual connection. I sing her hymns every Sunday at the kirk. She would never, could never behave as you have done tonight. Haskins, telephone now. For some reason, Patricia Jance had never been in when the BBC had called. She was, presumably, out on the West Cliff, hammering away at her little portable typewriter. Patricia Jance knew absolutely which side her bread was buttered. God was in his heaven and he smiled down on all those bunnies and squirrels skipping through the piney glades of the West Cliff. And, moreover, Lavinia Hardcastle earned twice as much plus expenses from not doing the programmes for 6 weeks as Patricia Jance would have done had she ever been there to answer the telephone. Listening to that rather inebriated tale from the cliff edge, and a very special thanks to our guest artist Holly Cooper, who appeared by courtesy of the Cliff Edge Operatic Society. Do you come to the West Cliff to write poetry, or to watch the baby squirrels, or to dodge work? Well, as we would say here, fair play to you, mate. And I'll see you next week for another Tale from the Cliff Edge.